Fan Morning Show. J.D. Buckus, Blake Murphy, Eilish 4-4. That's a hard song to start the day with energy-wise. That's like a hard one to match the energy. It's Super Bowl Sunday this weekend, so Vix decided to hijack the aux cord, give himself a bonus, play the greatest halftime show hits, which I went through my brain a lot last night after he had asked me. But that's like, how do you match the energy of that song? How's the song make you feel, Purple Rain? Blake Murphy, Eilish 4-4.
Mellow.
Yeah, I know. I'm very much like, all right, I guess
like I might crawl back into bed during the break after that one. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm ready to bust out the like fake, like I'm ready to air guitar solo on the stage in the greatest Super Bowl halftime performance.
Yeah. It really is the greatest one. Unless you count the Janet Jackson, like actually seeing a boob when you're in high school moment, because that's like pretty iconic, you know, for, I think 14 or 15 year old JD and Blake, like all of a sudden a celebrity boob has made an appearance. It's a pretty life changing moment. I got to say Justin Timberlake doing it too. At the time, our biggest celebrity
wasn't as iconic for me, but yes, I have seen the replays many times in my lifetime.
I'll never forget actually it happening and going, there's no way that's just what happened. And I was on a couch with my girlfriend's dad, not to brag, having a girlfriend in high school. That's right.
That's
I know.
Sick.
Everybody relax. But yeah, I think it was one of the first Super Bowls I watched as an adult. And then bang.
You picked a good one.
I know. And he was like, does that just happen? I was like, no possible way. This is the Super Bowl, sir. There's no boobs. There were boobs that day, my friends. There were boobs that day.
Great start to a loaded show today. We got Raptors, trade deadline stuff, Jack Campbell concern, Bobby Webster on later, Super Bowl betting preview. And we started off with
a boob.
Hey, guys. Yeah, boobs are iconic, huh?
Yeah, they are. They are. Sometimes they are, and that was one. There's no doubt about it.
Teenage JD, hey man, what would you rather do? Would you rather host a 4-hour morning show in Toronto sports, or would you rather see a boob?
You're like, you know, ooh, the answer. You know the answer.
You know the answer, bro.
You know the answer. Yes, it is a loaded day, so I'll stop screwing around. I'll stop being such a boob. Let's go with the Toronto Raptors. The book is, what should we say, officially closed on the Kyle Lowry trade. I feel like it's a little premature, but we do have the assets back. Now there's no more dreaming on what Goran Dragic could be turned into. He has been turned into Thad Young, 33-year-old, 6'8" or 6'9", good offensive rebounder off the bench, who crashes the boards, 33 years old, great job. They get a guy, they trade a first-round pick, I believe they get back a Detroit second-round pick, and Goran Dragic out the door. Thad Young is your Toronto Raptor. Now, Blake, I know that you're going to give us more of the actual financial picture here a little bit, because there are some significant moves, but let's just start with this. Like, I tweeted yesterday, it's underwhelming, and I don't know how anyone could say really otherwise. The idea that you would be excited for Thad Young when a week ago we were bringing up names like Miles Turner is tough. And it reminds me a little bit of last year's deadline with Kyle Lowry, where I think maybe, and we'll find out today from Bobby Webster when we speak to him at 9 o'clock, that a lot of us, in trying to interpret the market, misinterpreted potentially the value of a first-round pick this year that was in the 20s, or what even a future first-round pick was going to be worth. Because even though this is being framed as a quote-unquote trade-down of 10 picks for the Toronto Raptors, it's a 33-year-old veteran player who's had one good season in his last three, and absolutely provides a skill set that the Raptors have in spades. I'll start with you, Eilish. Just in terms of your level of excitement yesterday when you saw this, or how you felt.
Yeah, you know, I think you touched on it a bit. I feel like if we hadn't heard all those sexy names before, that we would feel a little bit better about this. I think we were teased a little bit. We saw a little bit of a boob maybe, and then we were denied the full look, you might say.
Turns out there was a pasty. Yeah,
there was a pasty. But then I tried to find a positive spin on it, as I always do.
Yeah, let's hear it.
And I think, okay, so he's a very well liked and respected veteran in the league. Okay,
that's not great for winning. But yes.
Quiet. Yeah. They've wanted him for years, obviously for a reason. It's like when the mid 2000s Leafs went and got like Owen Nolan and Gilmore and Housley and Leach. It's like someone that you wanted in the end of their career for like morale.
Two of those guys were really good.
Okay. Well, still, they wanted older guys for like veteran presence. I think that is a positive. I think there's a relationship with him and OG from his AAU days. So maybe that helps with, you know, helping some of the younger players develop. And that's basically what I came down to in my positives when I was looking for something to bring a little bit of light. But I do think the fact that we had heard all these other names, Turner, whatever, makes us feel a little bit shortchanged, if that makes sense.
Like,
it does make sense. The market shifted a little bit when Sabonis came off and Turner was no longer a thing. We didn't see Eric Gordon move. We didn't see either of the guys the Hawks were rumored to be shopping move. The Spurs ended up, the Derek White trade is probably the most interesting in terms of, hey, if you're willing to eat money, could you've had something like that? But they also held on to Jakob Poeltl. And then everything I heard yesterday was once the Harden Simmons stuff picked up, the league basically froze. Everyone was like, we got to wait to see how this shakes out. And then you have the Porzingis to Washington wrinkle after that. The Raptors moved early to get Thad Young. And I think that that's a signal that, you know, they knew pretty early that the targets that we were talking about with just losing the first altogether were not going to happen. Like they just, whether it was Eric Gordon's medicals, whether it was the Hawks being like, no, we can't sell when we have a Trae Young year, like it's too bad a signal, whatever the case, those options weren't there. So yes, the deal is functionally, if the season ended today, you're moving down 11 spots in the draft, turning Dragic into Thad Young, saving about $3.5 million additional wiggle room under the tax to fill that last roster spot, to convert Justin Champagne, whatever. You save about $1 million in real money when you prorate the salaries. You create a small traded player exception that could be useful in the summer. All that stuff is relevant from the team side. From the fan side, you turn Dragic into Thad Young, who is, again, 33 years old. You had to know that the Raptors were only going to acquire someone who was between 6'6" and 6'9". That's why they had to waive Drew Eubanks, because some places he's listed at 6'10". And they were like, nope, can't have it. Can't have it. Just in case he's over 6'9", we got to get rid of him. But look, Thad Young, a year ago, was a guy that every contender was trying to poach from Chicago. He had a very good season last year. As far as combo forwards and even guys who can play a little bit of small ball center go, he is one of the very best playmakers in the league. You can use him a lot as a screener in short roll. You know, if you want to run some stuff through him through the elbows, you can drop him into the post in a lot of the same sets that they use already for Ananobi and Barnes. Certainly not advocating that you funnel touches away from those guys to Thad Young. But when Young is playing, you don't have to change a lot stylistically. Now, the shortcoming is obviously he's 33. He has two seasons in the last five where he shot the three well. And even if you believe that, hey, his catch-and-shoot corner threes are fine, they're not like a closeout aggressively weapon. They're a show-me weapon. And then defensively, he's good and versatile and very, very smart. But he's 33 years old and he wasn't playing a ton. So, like, that's a bit of a, we need to see it before you totally buy in that he still has it. And then, yes, Ailish, he is generally considered one of the best dudes in the league. Good leader. This team desperately needed a quote who wasn't Fred VanVleet for us media types.
True.
So that element is real. And then, yeah, they'll have his bird rights if things work out in the summer or work out the rest of the season. Maybe you re-sign him via rights. It is a little underwhelming. And more so than the roster aspect, JD, the underwhelming part to me is you didn't roll that Dragic asset into something that is an asset this summer. And Bobby Webster mentioned it yesterday, and we'll talk to him about it at 9 o'clock. He said, hey, like, we have our core five, and you know, Boucher's a free agent, and Thad Young's a free agent. We'd have the mid-level exception. And all that stuff is true. But the piece that I'm going to have up at sportsnet.ca later this morning goes into what their 2022 summer looks like. they've got 30 to 35 million in wiggle room under the tax. Re-signing Boucher and using the mid-level leaves you a lot of room there still that, sure, maybe you don't spend money just for the sake of it, but you don't have that asset anymore to acquire a piece back in trade without removing from your core.
Yeah. So Thad Young, the shooting thing is a complete non-factor for me. He has 2 years in his entire career where he's made over a three a game. He's a career 33% shooter. So I think Thad Young is a guy who, frankly, cannot shoot. I've never once watched Thad Young play and thought, oh no, Thad Young's open. You can't have it. I get the whole trade down thing. And how Raptors fans and everyone has gone, oh, it's just a trade down. It's really not that big of a deal. And it's a bad draft. It's a bad draft. The last time I remember hearing about a draft this early that it was this bad was 2013. It reminds me of 2013 right now where everyone said bad draft, bad draft, bad draft. In the 2013 draft, the following players went between 20 and 30. Mason Plumlee, Tim Hardaway Jr., Reggie Bullock, and famously, at 27, Rudy Gobert. After 30, nobody. Nobody of consequence between 30 and the rest of the draft. Unless you count Giannis Tima, Latvian legend, at 30 to the Memphis Grizzlies. My point is that 10 picks in the draft does matter. I didn't really like how it was a complete nothing to Raptors fans yesterday. I would rather have the good organization that's good at drafting pick 10 picks higher. To go down and get Thad Young, I don't really understand it. I'll be honest. I think that Thad has a, like, Ailish, when you say the thing about, hey, maybe he helps OG or he had mentored OG or he's a good guy in the room, the Raptors, to me, I thought, have a good room. Is there problems with the Raptors' room? They're guys who have a core group together that all really seem to like each other. And if you go to the bench,
that's
right?
That's the kind of thing that it's great to have, but you don't want that to be the first thing out of your mouth, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I was struggling to find things, so that's not a great sign.
You know what the Raptors are able to bring off their bench? 6'9" guys who crash the offensive glass and who can cut to the basket. That's Precious Achiuwa. That's Chris Boucher. I appreciate that we will continue to see maybe a little bit more depth when it comes to the Raptors' ability to throw 6'8", stretchy, good defenders who are engaged throughout the game, who can get to the basket. I'm curious to see how this guy is going to be as a rim roll player, because he's probably going to be better at that than Precious Achiuwa. There's some things that Thad Young can do well. I'm not trying to portray this guy as though he's a complete bum or a non-factor on a team that, you know, he's an upgrade on Yuta Watanabe, who you essentially couldn't play before. I just, from a skill set standpoint, I don't know what he's doing for you that you don't already have all of. Like, to go out and get a big seemed as though that could have really been something you don't have. To go out and get a guard, it seemed like something you don't really have. And I can't remember who tweeted it yesterday. I think it was Joe Wolford of The Score. Is that how you say his name, Blake? I hope
Wolfon.
I got that right. Wolfon. Yeah, Joe Wolfon of The Score. He tweeted, hey, at this point now, you need to play Malachi Flynn. And I totally agree. Hey, you didn't do something? Well, now Masai and Nurse have to go and sit down with one another and say, hey, it's time for you to give this guy a little bit of a look down the stretch because we didn't give you a guard. So use this the guard that we have.
Did you not get 20 minutes, too, last night, right?
Yeah, Malachi also Flynn? your franchise point guard is dealing with a mysterious groin injury now after playing Ailish. Infinite minutes.
I actually think 20 minutes against the Houston Rockets in a game where you don't have Fred is not that great.
Right, like, better than three or four.
He was good.
Baby
he was good,
steps.
Though, at least.
He was good.
Yeah. Guess what? Yeah. I think he's kind of decent. I've never really seen Malachi Flynn play.
Out, right?
Yeah, I've never really seen him play where I've gone, that guy like patently can't play. Anyway, we don't need to get into a big Malachi Flynn conversation.
No.
My point was simply that Thad Young is not really bringing in a skill set that you didn't have before. And if, yes, Blake, as he mentioned, the first thing out of your mouth is, well, he's a veteran who's good in the room. I'm saying, that's great. See if you can get that on the buyout market.
And so I actually think Flynn is a relevant topic, not only because they didn't add a guard, but because he's exactly the kind of pick range that Bobby Webster has in mind when he says yesterday in his press conference, well, we don't see a lot of incremental drop-off between those spots in the draft. Now, obviously, this is specific to the specific draft. And, you know, what is the hit rate? What is the distribution of guys? I pulled the numbers. going back to 2013, so when this front office took over, it's also conveniently the draft you mentioned, JD. Picks 18 to 21, the range that the Raptors will likely fall in, have averaged 6.7 win shares per draft slot. Picks 31 to 34, which where they're picked now, 4.7 win shares per draft slot. So, and that's total, so not per season.
Yeah,
it's about a 40% swing. Now, what Bobby Webster is probably looking at is, hey, we took Siakam at 27. Everyone else had him mocked in the mid-40s to 50s. Hmm. We took Malachi Flynn at 29. He definitely would have been there in the early 30s. You know, we got Delano Banton.
That was a pretty big shift in examples, but yes.
Well, yeah, you should have taken Desmond Bain, but I'm not going to relitigate that part. What I'm saying is, like, they have picked in the late 20s multiple times where the guy that they picked would have been there in the 30s anyway. So I get what he's saying there, but there's also still like a value cost. Like to move up on draft night from 31 to 20 would probably cost you an extra high second, maybe even a late first. So there's a real asset cost there. That's all I'm trying to say.
But that's a really good point as well, is on draft night, it's certainly going to cost you more than a Thad Young to move up that 10 spots. And I thought about that as we went forward is, what is Thad Young now doing for the rest of your season? If Thad Young's contract is the exact same and it rolls over another year, old JD has no gripe because it's what Blake and I discussed yesterday, which is you move that trade asset into, or that trade contract into the following year. For me, this checked no boxes of what the Raptors needed. They didn't need veteran leadership. They didn't need more offensive rebounding. They didn't need another 6'8" defender who could come in off the bench. I looked at this deal and said, what is it providing me that I was hoping for? A contract that rolls over next year? Not up. I wasn't looking for bird rights for a 33-year-old who might not be good anymore. I'm sorry.
And this is the same thing that I've talked about a couple weeks in a row, is what is the direction? Like, what does this signal to fans? And I think that's a good question when we come out of this. Is it, hey, you know, let's make the playoffs and, like, let's fight hard and get some experience? Does the 7-game or 8-game winning streak not really prove anything, or does it not signal that that means that the Raptors were going to go all in? Are we just going to just ride this out? And I wonder if you have more, like, insight on what this is signaling for the Raptors.
To me, it signals that this overperformance or this hot streak hasn't changed the front office's outlook on this group. Yep. They won 8 games in a row. It's the 5th longest winning streak in franchise history. It's the 6th longest winning streak in the entire NBA this year. They're now 8 games over 500. Like, we are well beyond like this team. They're almost at their win total over under already. Yeah. And we're 54 games in. Like, they have overperformed. And what not going in says to me is, okay, they have still, and like, look, this is to their credit too, because you don't want to overreact to, you know, an 8-game winning streak that makes you the 5th best team in the East, but not a top 4 team, especially after, like, we'll talk later on about what Brooklyn and Philly and the other teams did, Milwaukee as well with Serge Ibaka. So they maybe didn't want to put assets in just to be more competitive and getting bounced in the first round of the playoffs. If I'm in that locker room, I'm probably a little bit disappointed that, we've overperformed. We've been better than you thought. We dealt with all this Dragic noise the whole year. And you're saying, well, it doesn't change the outlook. We still need to take a long-term plan. We still need to have eyes on 2023 flexibility. Now, look, Fred VanVleet will come on and he'll tell you the next time he does media availability, they'll spit, like, the leaders in that room will spin it as, this is a vote of confidence in who we have here. They believe we can keep going with this. Like, we didn't need anyone. That's not accurate. They didn't see a move that changed the big picture for this group. So they're going to just ride it out, which is fine. It's just a little underwhelming when you're on an 8-game win streak and everything has beaten expectations for the season.
Not to mention that even as it felt as though the Eastern Conference was closing up yesterday, right? You see Brooklyn moves James Harden and Ben Simmons goes there, and you say, well, wow, the Nets actually have now surrounded KD with more shooting. Now they don't miss Joe Harris as much because they add Seth Curry, and Ben Simmons comes in there and might be a great fit with them, and all of a sudden they're more dangerous. And James Harden, wow, now he's freed up to be with Joel Embiid. And you've really, if you look at it, upgraded from Seth Curry to James Harden. That's quite a thing for that team. Okay, but there's still a lot of question marks with all these things. Like, these teams have to make it work on the fly, right? The Raptors do have the advantage of, we have something that's been working now for an entire season. We've been rolling all these minutes together, rep after rep after rep. You guys figured on the fly. You're obviously the more talented duos here, but we are still the more talented fivesome who have been playing together for 54 games now. There's also the Kevin Durant is hurt right now. Joel Embiid has a track record of getting hurt. That's something that I really do believe you have to consider when we're discussing the openness of the East. I didn't view yesterday as, oh, it's all shut down. So, Blake, I give the Raptors a bit of reprieve both deadlines, these last two, of, hey, there were things outside of your control, right? Kyle Lowry, you wanted to do right by him and only send him to a certain couple places. So that changed his market, right? That changed his market. And guess what? I was kind of pissed off because Daryl Morey was justified now not trading draft capital for Kyle Lowry because they end up using it in this deal. And you go, damn it! Daryl Morey was right! I hate it! That's actually the most frustrating part of yesterday is that he's right. He held on to Ben Simmons, didn't overreact for Kyle Lowry, and now he's holding James Harden, right? Like, I don't know.
Sure, but if, like, you also punted on a year of Embiid's MVP caliber window, right? Like,
sure.
I don't know that it's right, quote unquote. Like, what if you could have got him for last year's first?
It's like, maybe. You know, if you do it and you trade him for last year's first or whatever ends up happening, there's always the alternate timeline window of Lowry fixes, Ben Simmons doesn't have as bad of a series. Maybe they all work together. Sure. My main point is that if you would have told a Sixers fan, hey, you're not going to get Kyle Lowry, but a year later you're going to get James Harden using some of that draft capital, I think almost every Sixers fan, given the blind test of those two things, would say, yeah, give me Harden and not the Lowry year. But you're working within limited parameters. It's pretty...
JD, you just got digitized there, so we're gonna keep on. Yes, I understand what you're saying. Anyway, so the East shapes up with those trades, and we'll talk about them again a little bit at 7:30. But Miami didn't do anything, but they're the best team in the East heading into the deadline. Milwaukee got stronger. Philadelphia got stronger. Brooklyn got stronger. And
I think, in my opinion, the Nets were the winners of trade deadline.
Yeah, I love that deal for them, especially under the assumption that Harden was going to leave. You get Ben Simmons, who's very young and like much younger and very good. Mm-hmm. You get Seth Curry as a roster balancing thing. You get two first round picks that you will surely look to use those to add in the offseason.
And you get rid of somebody that clearly did not want to play on your team.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about that a little later in the show. Mm-hmm. We should probably also talk about your Toronto Maple Leafs. So we can close the book on the Raptors trade deadline for now. They have an open roster spot. They'll use that on some bio candidate or G League or Justin Champagne or whatever. For the purposes of these conversations, the trade deadline is over for the Raptors. Goran Dragic turns into Thad Young.
I want to come back to that later in the show today because I do think the Kyle Lowry window or element of this matters. That it isn't simply Goran Dragic for Thad Young to me. This is now, hey, you turned Kyle Lowry into Thad Young and Precious Achiuwa. And like I said, there are things that are factors in all of this. There's context that matters. It's not as simple as saying, oh, the Raptors thought Kyle Lowry was only worth Precious Achiuwa and Thad Young and throwing down 10 picks in the draft. But it is worth revisiting that, hey, how was this handled? Was this handled properly? Are there any regrets? But we'll come back to that later in the show because you're right. Let's touch on the Leafs a little bit here. Let's get into it. They get out-muscled and Jack Campbell. Bigger concern, Jack Campbell or the physicality of that hockey game? I'll start with you, Ailish.
Jack Campbell. I know coming in that Calgary is one of those hard teams to play against. They're physical, they're pushy, they're going to block shots and outwork you. So you should know that coming into it. But we talked about it yesterday that this is the biggest game of his season to come back, to own that net, to show that before was just a little bit of a hiccup. It was a blip. It's not who he is. And I don't think he did that last night. I think we saw another tough performance. He's got 5 goals against in 3 out of his last 6 starts. And, you know, I don't think that all of the goals you can put on him, but when it's 1-1 midway through the game, you can't surrender three goals on three shots. Like, you just need to have more resolve than that. You need to be able to pull out a big save, because the game shifted completely. And they were outworking the Leafs at times. Calgary's a tough team to play against, but there was potential that the Leafs could have won that game until that three-shot series.
Three or more in seven of his last eight with an .864 save percentage.
Yeah.
We said yesterday, hey, we think that he gets the net Saturday. Blake, do you still feel the same way? Does he get the net on Saturday night?
I don't think so. Like, it would be different if it was a couple rough goals and, like, they bounced back and still had a good game around him and stuff. But that three goals on three shots in under 3 minutes and that whole second period, I really disliked how little the Leafs did to try to pick him up. And like, I know it's not that simple. Like, you can't just be, oh, we'll go score a goal and get that one back. But they,
you can change your momentum or injury.
After each of those goals, they were right back on their heels in their own end. And maybe if I had seen more spark that way, but you run the risk, I think, of, you know, this makes it worse if he comes out there Saturday and it's shaky again and there's another stretch like that. You know, and I think you can spin it as, hey, we want to get both goalies work or whatever. That was really, really disappointing, not just from him, but just the lack of response around it, where, like, after the second one, like, he's clearly wearing it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, okay, well, we're just going to – here's a clean zone entry. Fire away. That was a rough couple minutes. It was also, like, right as I caught up on the game. So it was very disappointing for me personally.
I don't think his teammates did him a ton of favors yesterday after the first period. I thought the Leafs came out strong, and then they kind of fell apart as the game went on, as Calgary just out-muscled them, beat them up. And it's one of those games where people can draw the easy conclusion of, wow, is Toronto really built for the playoffs? Are they tough enough? Are they big enough? Well, that's just not going to be a part of their core identity with this group. It's just not. People keep hoping that, okay, you add a Wayne Simmonds to the fringes. Wayne Simmonds doesn't play enough every night, nor is he young enough to be carrying you and turning you into a physical team, right? That's something that is a top-to-bottom roster philosophy, and it's just not who the Leafs are. They're not a tough team that, when they go into a Western Conference building of the Calgary Flames, can stand up for themselves the same way. But yes, you're right. There is a form of toughness where you say, hey, we need to bear down right now. The game is shifting right now. We need to make sure that we're paying attention to detail. We're making sure that we're being, like, tough to play against. And they didn't do that. But ultimately, Jack's got to make some stops. Like, that this game tilted because the goaltender, who was just at the All-Star game, couldn't make a damn save. And this has been cropping up too often. And I'm a little concerned for a couple reasons. One, and I don't know Jack Campbell, so I don't mean for this to come off as overly personal, but we have heard people around him say, and we've seen it when he does his media availabilities, he is someone who wears his emotions on his sleeves. He is someone who wears it, as Blake said, when he is down. And I wonder what the effect of that is on a room when a guy is struggling and openly kicking himself while he's down. Because if I'm a player in that locker room, I don't want you to not be making saves, and then I have to see you after the game and try to also pick you up emotionally and mentally. That's exhausting. And I do wonder if there is a little bit of that element here where the guys are going, oh, Jack, make a save, man. And don't make me after the game be the one who has to tell you that you're not the world's worst goalie after you mope at the podium. Because that's making it worse. And the second part that I'm a little concerned about is we have zero track record of Jack Campbell bouncing back from scenarios like this. It's something I've mentioned before, but last year he comes in and he goes 10 straight games. He's brilliant. He goes into the playoffs, and as much as he blamed himself for that last goal, that wasn't really adversity. That was adversity for the team. This year he starts the season and he's Mr. Wonderful. He's fantastic. He's making save after save. He justifiably makes the All-Star game, but this is his first time in a major media market where he struggled. And we don't know if he can pick himself out of that. We don't know if he can bounce back with that. And so, yeah, I'm hoping he does. I believe that he has a lot of talent and that he can get back there. But when you factor in all those things, it doesn't really help me sleep at night knowing that we don't know he can do those things.
It's funny you mentioned the players and having to pick up somebody or like a goaltender. It did seem, and maybe I'm reading too much into it with body language because I've been in that situation, but even I think it was like the point shot that went in and Muzzin was kind of skating by and blocked him a bit. Just like everyone's body language after that went in, Mitch Marner looks skyward. Jack Campbell looks at Muzzin kind of like, what are you doing, man? And you could see the tension a bit of like, all right, this isn't the same confident Leafs team. It seemed like there was some frustration. There's a lot of, you know, videos of, you know, the camera would pan onto the bench and there wasn't that same, hey, let's go, guys. Like, no problem. Like, you know, where's Tavares as the captain having that resolve to be like, no problem. Like, let's get one back, you know, like whatever. It just seemed like they had kind of settled in the fact that it wasn't going to be their game. And that's not the type of team with the mental toughness. They don't have the physical toughness, as you said. Like, you know, even after the Kasha hit, there's a little bit of a pushback, but they still got out-muscled and, you know, out-hit their whole game. And that isn't going to be their identity, but your identity needs to be that you have some mental toughness. And we saw that a little bit throughout their stretch where I think they had a couple of comeback wins, right? Why was that something that they didn't have last night? I don't know. They looked like they were just the weaker team in many facets.
Right. And so I also understand that there are some Leaf fans that are listening to this right now going, guys, they're 30-11-6. They lost one hockey game. Jack's going to be fine. The team is good. No, but this is what happens when a team is very good, is you look at things through this lens of, well, what could end up actually costing you a championship or a playoff round? And again, if I'm going to bring up how we don't know that whether Jack Campbell can bounce back from things like this, we also don't know if the Leafs can win a playoff round because they haven't done that either. So pardon me if, you know, they're not getting all the benefit of the doubt from having regular season success and not postseason success. Okay, Blake, any last thought on the Campbell thing, or do you want to move to the Kasha hit?
Yeah, I don't have a lot on the Campbell thing. I think the response from here is a way bigger thing than how we feel in the moment.
So, Kasha hit. I thought it was clean. I thought it was squeaky clean. Zadorov is 6'8", I believe. Kasha has his head down, and it's just about as clean of a hit as I could possibly see. I did think it was sort of funny. I didn't notice because, again, I've been trying to stay off social media. Blake alerted me to the fact that Twitter was quite upset with the hit. I just kind of thought about it as, once again, Kasha has put himself in a vulnerable position, which he seems to do a lot. And I kind of want to talk about it with more players. And Ailish, I'd be curious to hear what, you know, your thoughts on it specifically. But he gets hurt again. This time he doesn't bounce back and end up back on the ice, which is unfortunate. You hope the guy's okay, but I cannot believe that Twitter thought that was a dirty hit. I saw unanimously across the board, every single former player that weighed in on it thought it was a clean hit, and that it was only the internet dorks that thought that it was a dirty hit. I don't know. I guess Zadorov should have shrunk down. He should have been 5'10". You're not allowed to play hockey if you're big anymore. Morgan Riley, I get it, going after and sticking up for your teammate, but why are we doing this after every clean hit now, like where there has to be some kind of a skirmish and a fight? It's just that's a clean hit. That's a clean hit. That's as clean as it gets. There's zero dirtiness about that. That's a big player hitting a guy with his head down who put himself in a vulnerable position. Like, what are we doing here? This is hockey.
And what did I text you? Like, I hadn't started the game yet because I was on Raptors first, and I was like, am I going crazy? Like, no. And I would certainly think on the spectrum of things, I would lean more toward player safety and head safety than you, JD. Like in your terms,
yeah, you're
softer.
As big of an internet nerd as there is.
But, like, I just saw a guy with his head down and a very big defenseman, and, like, it's a little unfortunate that shoulder to the head, sure, like, but that's where their bodies are when they're skating like that. Like, it didn't look like intent. It didn't look like targeting. It looked like a little dude running into a big dude, and the physics of it were just unfortunate.
Guys, what kind of suicide pass, though, from Engvall? Like, buddy, you got to know better. That was the thing that I thought of immediately, is if I'm Engvall.
Good call.
Oh my God, you just put that guy in a body bag. Like, you threw the puck up to Kasha and he's got his head down. That's on him. But Engvall sewered him to the moon. So that's my first initial take on it. The second thing is the size difference is the conversation here. Like, that's it. Like, his shoulder happens to be at Kasha's head. Unless you want this guy to turtle him, like to duck down, which would probably be even worse of a play, that's what's going to happen. Like, you, that's the size matchup. When you watch it in slow motion, which I have, his shoulder goes into his head. But that is the way that he had lined up for the hit, as he is a foot taller than Kasha. So I just don't know what was expected. You know, is it a deliberate headshot? No. I think he skated into the hit and was leaning forward to hit this player. And then his helmet went flying, and it looked a lot of dramatic flair. Unfortunately, that his helmet went flying, and it, you know, it's Kasha who's had concussion injuries, but that pass, oh my God. Awful.
I really do believe so much of this discourse literally just comes out of the fact that people know that if you tweet something like "this is a dirty hit," that it's going to do a lot of tweets, period. I think that people do that stuff as a form of self-promotion more than they do that it's a real belief that the hit is dirty. Because I think that you either don't know the game if you think that's a dirty hit, or you're trying to get some type of an internet clout thing where you're playing to safety Twitter, you know? There's no other explanation for it. Kasha, though, Ailish, I mentioned, he's always a guy who gets hurt. Like I said, he leads the league in going down the tunnel, right? It's just tunnel. Oh, Kasha, is he hurt? Is he hurt? Is this the time? Is this the time? You hope he ends up bouncing back, but this is, God, if we actually did have...
We have digitized JD again.
JD, you're
sure
a robot today, right?
I'm not sure what's going on with this microphone today. I know that there's more on Kasha. We'll talk about Kasha a little bit more later. We'll talk about Jake Muzzin as well. Ailish, we got to get back on that road to the podium.
We do. We have to get into the Olympics. Big day today at the Olympics. Friday. Oof, it's going to be jam packed. So it's time for Road to the Podium, brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro all the way. The Road to the Podium, presented by CertainTeed. Okay, guys, buckle in. I've got four events that are must-watches. Must-watches. I'm not throwing in luges and, you know, the qualifications of the 1,000-meter speed skate. This is real. At 7 a.m., so in 23 minutes, men's curling, Canada versus Switzerland, round robin. That begins. It's going to be awesome. Following that, your girls, women's hockey, Canada versus Sweden at 8 a.m., quarterfinal match. So that's your morning watching. Grab your coffee, put us on, put those on mute so you can hear us and watch men's curling, women's hockey this morning. In the evening, women's curling, Canada versus Sweden. So we're just hopefully going to put Sweden to shame all day today in multiple sports. So Canada versus Sweden in the round robin for women's curling, coming off a big win against Korea yesterday, which is a bit of a nail biter. And then this evening, the battle that has stood against time and decades of rivalry, men's hockey, Canada versus United States, round robin, 11 p.m. I know JD has plans to go have a couple bevvies and watch that one.
Correct.
Full day of Canadian action, curling and hockey, doubleheaders. Let's go.
It's obviously Canada, USA in hockey. I'm sorry to the women's team, all right? But today, the men, they get the spotlight, all right? Mm-hmm. You ladies go beat up the Swedes by the spread
finally,
of 7.5.
A moment for men.
That's
yes,
right.
God,
finally,
it's been
finally,
so long.
Finally, finally, finally. But no, it's Canada, USA, all right? Canada popped off in that tournament to start it with big hits, with some big goals. They beat the crap out of a German team that actually went deep in the last Olympics. And yes, it's Germany,
didn't
whatever.
Didn't they win silver or bronze last year?
Yeah, I think that they won silver. I think that they were in the silver medal game. Either way, I'm glad. Canada hockey, the team is exciting. They were fun to watch as a second screen experience yesterday during our show. Now we get to go out, have a Canada-USA hockey game of the Olympics, get to stay up late, have a bunch of pints. That's fun to me. That is the return to normalcy, baby. Go to a bar, stay up late, watch Team Canada play hockey, and hopefully beat the brakes off the Americans. Let's go!
I love it. Obviously, the Canada versus Sweden women's hockey is expected to be a blowout. The line's 7.5.
Yeah. Sorry.
I think that they will easily surpass that line. Yeah. Sweden has fallen off the earth in terms of their women's hockey program. So that should be a bit of a cakewalk. I wonder if you can do a Canada curling hockey parlay. We should talk about that during the break and see what the odds would be. But speaking of the break, I have maybe, most definitely, the best A-list edition that you have ever heard. All right?
All right.
Road to the Podium, brought to you by CertainTeed.
Who wrote a children's
book? No, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed Pro all the way. Hold on to your hats. The A-list next.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 2 days until the Super Bowl. I've been waiting all year for this. And with the Super Bowl comes a lot of weird promotions and commercials and advertising. And that is what headlines the A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Okay, so
you're excited about this one. I'm excited.
Yes. So, I have a few, but I'm going to start with this one because I assume that JD and Blake will have a lot to say about it. So we can just punt the other ones later. Have you guys ever used a bidet?
Yes, of course. What am I, a monster?
Blake?
Yeah, okay. I'm a full-time salaried employee now. The blog days are behind me. Teepees okay. For the blog boys. This is we're living right over here.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Okay, so there's a company called Tushy. So they're like the hipster bidet.
I know what this is.
It's the hipster bidet. So you know you can attach it to your toilet. And it's very easy. It's not like you need to get an actual bidet. It's like a portable bidet. They have created a Super Bowl contest called Tushy Super Bowl. How it works is you can win $10,000 if you send in a picture of your post-game poop
this
to Tushy.
That's ever happened.
The Super Bowl Monday post-game poop, and they will be determining the winner, and there's criteria. So I went into the rules section on the website. I downloaded the PDF, and I've been reading the rules for you in case you're interested in participating.
I'm not interested in participating. I'm interested in being a judge.
So the judges, what will happen is you will be judged on the following criteria on a scale from 1 to 5.
Yeah.
Okay. Texture of entry. Color of entry.
Oh, yeah.
Mass of entry.
Number one, most important.
And extra flair of entry. In an event of a tie, they will have a new set of judges to reevaluate and continue to judge your post-game poop. You can win $10,000. And they said bonus points if you tell them what the food was before it came out.
This is every guy's dream. Since the invention of Snapchat, every person knows, every guy knows. You know, we might say things like, oh, the gender, don't say there's differences in the gender. No, there is, because I don't think women send each other their poops, and I think men do. Like, that's a thing that we do, all right? It's a thing we do, and we send each other our poops, and we judge our poops, and it's happened a million times. And if you're a guy out there who has not seen one of his friend's poops, then do you really have any friends who know how to use their phones, all right?
No, it's just that guy who doesn't go to Super Bowl games and collects tickets. He's the only one who's never done that.
If you've never done that in your group of friends, this is one of I can't even get the words out. I'd be so excited. There should be a contest for the group of friends that get to be the judge of this. That would be another contest. It's like, who gets to be the judge? There's a South Park episode where they have Bono and Randy.
Yeah.
weight of the poop and the Keurig and the Katie Keurig and who has the biggest poop. This is a staple in the male community, all right? Who has the biggest poo and legendary big poos. All I want to see are these poos. I want to be involved in this contest. I want to be a judge. I want to get a monocle. I want to be a part of this. I want my friends to be a part of this. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened in the history of contests. I care infinity about this more than a beauty pageant. Like, this is my Super Bowl.
You can be involved, JD.
Yes,
this gets better.
We get to fan vote?
Because all you have to do is click hashtag Tushy Super Bowel, and people will be tagged. You post the poop on the timeline.
No, I know,
that's
but
then
you
works.
Don't see the best one. Then it's just you're all seeing a bunch of mediocre boys. Like, I want the top of the creme de la creme.
You can go in the thread on Twitter, and you'll be able to see everyone's poop, and you'll be able to you could weigh in. You could be quote tweeting saying,
yes,
this is a winner in my opinion, or this one sucks. So it will be public. So if you're not interested, maybe mute the word tushy and bidet and hashtag tushy super bowel. And yeah, that's Monday.
That's so good.
Are you
to win this award?
Are you ready for some poop contest analytics?
Yes.
Yeah, of course. This is a really
The approach here, you got to rethink your entire Super Bowl Sunday spread.
Mm-hmm.
Because a normal, I'm going to have 8 or 9 beers over the course of the day. I'm going to mix chili with nachos, with pulled pork,
with the mass.
With whatever. No, you got to
prepare properly here. Yeah.
Yes. Without getting too specific,
you're going to have to put some thought into it.
Yeah. And look, you've got to do some honest reflecting about the big eating and drinking days you've had in the past and what those resulted in. And how bad you want this 10 grand. Like, you're maybe looking down a scenario where, hey, do you have to cut it at 3 or 4 beers? Because in terms of texture and consistency, if you go 7 or 8,
it's mass.
You're sacrificed. Well, you laid out all the categories. But the thing with mass is that mass is a lot more appreciable solid than it is in different forms.
But would that add to the extra flair of entry?
Well, we'll see, because and especially because this is a bidet company where you know, a pudding style submission fits the product better. It fits the product better, but it's certainly not going to win. You know, you're not going to do well on the judges' scorecards. That's the you've ground and pounded for 25 minutes and it was a boring fight, but everyone could be like, yeah, it was a good submission, but no one enjoyed it. So you got to rethink your whole Sunday.
I think this is going to be one of the most successful ad campaigns. Like, this is, I'm picturing the Don Draper meme where it's Don.
Oh yeah, him with the whiteboard.
Thing. Yeah, and it's just, what if we take pictures of their poop?
Share their poops.
Yeah, the guys share the poops, but. I love it. I love it. I think it's amazing. There's just so many. The only thing that I don't know is, does this translate to strangers' poos? Because when your friend does have one of the caliber of many Keurigs, you go, wow, that's an incredible one. And it does light up the group chat. And it's like, hey, you do ask those questions. What did you eat? What does this day? Like, you get the breakdown of what it is. And now, I don't know if you'll have the same curiosities for a stranger. I don't know. It's just when your friend does it, it's very much a, hey, this is personal to me. This is very – I've been close to the person who made that.
One other thing I need here, you got to hold up, like, Monday morning's newspaper with it, because there are probably a lot of guys who have one saved in the phone.
So, speaking of that, I just DM'd you one on Twitter. Maybe don't open it right now, but so I know somebody responded to the Twitter thread with a picture of the poop, and it's in a heart shape. Like, it's literally a heart-shaped poop.
Yeah.
And I just sent it to you guys, so I'm sorry about it, but I had to, it just popped up on the timeline there.
You get one. That's the only one you're allowed to
send. That's a good one. It's a heart shaped. It's got a cute Valentine. It'll be Valentine's
Producer
Day
Danielle
on Monday, actually.
Shapes do nothing for me, by the way.
Hey, that's the extra flair. That's the extra flair points. And also, Super Bowel Monday is also going to be Valentine's Day. So that's extra flair. If you're listening, try that.
That's extra flair.
Producer Danielle, whoever wins this contest, I want them on the show.
Yes,
I want to go through the Sunday. I want to go through everything that they – was this just – are you just – like – is this just a preternatural ability that you have, God-given talent? Did you lay out your Sunday specifically for this? I don't know. I want to know everything about the winner.
God, that made me laugh.
I hope
so
no
much.
One's eating a breakfast sandwich.
I'm so sorry.
Drive to work in this segment.
A couple texts in the text line saying that people loved it. Best A-list topic ever. So you know what? Yeah. We got to end it on that. We can't
A-list
even squeeze another one
meaning.
In. We can't even squeeze in another one. Sorry about that.